We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
All right, let's get going. So guys, for everyone who's joining, we're going to give, we want to have you guys comment. We have Tyler, who has been helping us out with a lot of back-end podcast stuff. He does the social media clips and all that kind of stuff. He's going to be following along in the comments, and he's going to be messaging them to us. We want to make this interactive. We want to hear what you guys have to say, ask questions, comments, your thoughts. We want to kind of make it an interactive thing as we go, diving into everything about this game. And Scott, don't you think that, because last year the game was on Tuesday, that extra day kind of just makes it feel too long. Like, I feel like the season ended a year ago at this point, and we've just been sitting on our hands waiting for this wild card game.
That's because when's the last time, besides a rainout or, you know, some other strange thing, that we've had 2 days off of baseball for the, you know, besides the All-Star break? It just doesn't happen. You know, at least with a rainout, you have anticipation of baseball. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so now the anticipation is like extremely real. You could cut it with a knife on how thick it is. But yeah, I kind of like having that first game so that you could just get into it and you don't have to worry about it anymore. Just let's go. Let's play baseball. And I know the National League is about to start, or they're starting now. So,
right. And there wasn't actually any days off from baseball because we had two tiebreaker games on Monday, and then we get the NL wild card tonight. But it's actually a good thing the AL's playing Wednesday, because it's supposed to be a much more good weather day in the Bronx on Wednesday night than it is tonight. I think it's supposed to rain tonight, so that would have really sucked. And that would have actually been fitting if the Yankees all season, who they had 20 games affected by rain, if they make it to the wild card game. And of course, that one's affected by rain too. So glad that did not happen.
Yeah, I would prefer just, you know, give me good conditions and let the best team win. I don't want any of those you know, great equalizers. Not that we really need it for this team, because honestly, both offenses are mashing and both bullpens supposedly show up. So it's relatively even matched, honestly, if you look at them on paper.
Yeah, this is not the Minnesota Twins, I don't think. I think even though the Oakland Athletics have no more starting rotation, I don't think they give a crap. They're going into it with the bullpen, and this offense is not the Minnesota Twins. This is not the Twins are the Yankees' punching bag. They are little brother. The Yankees, even when they were down 3-0, they knew this is the Minnesota Twins. We're going to come back. No worries. The Oakland Athletics, who do have a little bit of some postseason demons. Billy Bean has never been able to really do anything in the postseason with his teams. But the A's, I think, are going to be a much tougher matchup than the Twins were last year.
No, I agree. Plus, when you're looking at the lineup, these guys just don't care. I mean, they hit on the road better than they hit at home. You know, we've talked about this, the fact that if they were to win this game, they got to make an East Coast trip anyway. So, you know, they're looking at it as, let's just do this now. We're going to go to the East Coast, going to make a quick trip out of it, and then we'll go. But this team doesn't give me the sense of you know, big nerves coming into play. And I know when I spoke with Jane Lee, the beat writer for Oakland the other day, she was talking about that it could come into play. But when I see a young, hungry team like this, because you know they're probably cocky as hell too. They're all professional baseball players, young dudes. That's just how they are. And, you know, they're going to have a lot of confidence. Whereas I think the Twins last year was a little bit different, because there was a narrative between the Yankees and the Twins. The Yankees always beat the Twins, and they knew that. So there was something else going, I think, with that game as well. Whereas this one, it's really house money. They got nothing to lose.
So we've been doing this podcast for four seasons. This is the fourth year. Three times it's gone the Yankees to the wild card game. 15, 17, and 18. How are you feeling going into this one versus the other two?
You know, I don't even want to admit this, but I feel like I'm eerily confident. And maybe that's just because this isn't our first rodeo or second rodeo with this wild card. And after seeing what happened last year, after witnessing that entire comeback, and the fact that this team had the guts to come back after the bad Luis Severino start, it just gives me a little bit more confidence. Not to mention the fact that Severino now is coming back in the same position, knowing what happened last year. I feel like this is like a Tosh 2.0 redemption. You know what I mean? Like,
it's totally the redemption thing.
Is absolutely his redemption song, and he's ready to go for that. And I feel like he knows that. He knows he's had a bad second half. And later, you know, recently he's been a lot better. So I got to believe that he's going to be really ready for this game.
And it's also the redemption game for him and Gary Sanchez together against Oakland.
Right.
Because that was a shit show last time we saw that. So
they have to say it very lightly.
They have to redeem themselves as well. But I don't think anything can compare to the Walking Dead feel of 2015. We all knew that team was toast. So that was, you know, forget that year. 17 last year going into it, I think a lot of people were, well, what can we expect from this team? Hopefully good things happen, but this is a year that wasn't supposed to happen anyway. So kind of everything from here on out is gravy. And now this year, they have expectations. Got to at least get past this wild card game. I understand you're playing the Red Sox next, and they had 108 wins. But you lose this wild card game, you look back on the season, and it does not look good.
Sean Verma in the Facebook group just said, the Yanks haven't won the division since the BP show was created, so he's blaming us, which is probably fitting. It's probably about right. But we have made the playoffs.
How many postseason series have the Red Sox won since the BP show was created?
Not many.
Zero.
How many wins do those starting pitchers have?
Zero.
As Red Sox.
And the Yankees have won 2 postseason series. So,
yeah, so well, there we
series.
Go.
One and a half postseason series. I don't think I can consider the wild card game a postseason series.
No, let's all be honest. It's a play-in game.
Right.
To get to the actual playoffs.
Didi, Gardner, and Bird are the only 3 players who appeared in all 3 of those previous games. And Bird's not on the roster, and Gardner's probably not going to be in the starting lineup. So we might only see Didi as the main carryover. Quick trip down memory lane just to refresh people's memories. Then we're going to dive into everything with this game. So the Yankees were 3-3 against the Athletics this year. May 11th at the stadium, they lost 10-5. Sonny Gray did not pitch well in that game. May 12th, home game.
That was another one of those circled ones. Oh, maybe Sonny can turn it around here. It's against Oakland. It's at home. This is a perfect situation for him to turn it around.
No. Next year, we know if Sonny Gray does make it back to the starting rotation, we know don't circle any games for him because it's just going to make him poop himself.
No, I mean, next year, if he's here, there's zero expectations.
The 12th, they won that game in extra innings 7-6. Do you remember this game? Chapman walked like 45 people in the 9th inning, and somehow Brett Gardner got out of it. He threw a guy out at home plate. The Yankees got out of it, and then they won that game in extra innings. May 13th was a nice, easy home win, 6-2. Stanton went 4-for-4 with a home run. September 3rd, out in Oakland, the Yankees lost. Sabathia got crushed. He gave up 4 earned runs in 3 1/3 innings. The next day, Happ pitched great. The Yankees won. This was a game that Liam Hendricks actually opened for the A's. So the Yankees have seen Liam Hendricks on the mound opening a game before. And Luke, the legend, Voit homered late in that game. And then September 5th, we all remember the disaster that was Luis Severino and Gary Sanchez. That leads nicely into how do you feel when you saw the news? Luis Severino named Yankees starting pitcher. What was your gut reaction?
Yeah, so I was, my gut reaction was I wasn't surprised. Like I said this last time, I don't think I would have been surprised if any of these guys were named. I know a lot of people wanted Happ he would have been the most surprising of the three for me, at least, that knowing the way that Boone is and knowing, you know, just how this season has gone. And the fact
Happ would have been the most most surprising.
I think he would have been the most surprising for
Boone
to have chosen.
Even after the fact that Tanaka hadn't pitched since, when was it?
I don't think Wednesday that was a big deal. I don't think that's a big deal for them because, I mean, he's not going to throw if they win.
Severino hasn't pitched since
what happens Tuesday. If they win? I mean, he's still not going to throw, right? So they're going to play with him with a long stretch. I think Tanaka's long stretches don't bother them at all.
No.
So when Severino, I think, started showing that he was starting to get back into form his last few outings, I think that sealed the deal. I think what they wanted to see is more confidence out of him. They wanted to see him command his fastball better and then show that, you know, that life on the slider. And if he's able to do those two things, you know, even if the outcome wasn't the greatest, because his last start, he went 5, walked, I think, 3, you know, not exactly what you want to see on your last start, but I think he showed enough for them to do it. And that's what they were looking for. They were waiting for him to show just enough because that's the guy they wanted to go to.
The peripheral numbers look like Severino is back because his K percentage is 30.1%. His whiff percentage is 13.7% over his last 7 games. Those are in line with his first 18 starts of the season when he was maybe the best pitcher in baseball. And those were the numbers we kept talking about when he had that slump in the middle of the season. Why is he not getting strikeouts? Why is he not getting swings and misses? Those have come back, which tells me, like you said, his slider is back, his fastball late life is back, and that's good. But no matter who they picked, whether it was Tanaka, Severino, or Happ, they're probably not going to be going very deep in this game. They're still going to rely heavily on the bullpen.
Right, but
so
I think
four or five innings, I think, is kind of their ceiling, is what they're asking out of Severino.
Well, I think it's different with Severino. I think of the other two guys, I think that's absolutely what they were going to be doing. But I think if we start this game and Severino comes up and he shows that he's dominating and he's got that big fastball and the slider's moving and they're struggling against him, I could see them riding him out. Because
okay, that was going to be my question.
Yeah, I could see them riding him longer than the other two. I think the other two, because of the potential home run ball, they would go to the bullpen a little bit more. Now, granted, I'm talking about, when I say a little bit longer, I'm talking like starting an inning and a walk or a hit or anything like that. Any glimpse of anything going wrong, they will go to the bullpen.
It's
going to
be
quick. But I think Severino would be the guy that they would stick with longer if he looked like he was going well.
It's definitely quick leash, but I think say it was Happ, and Happ goes through five innings and looks good. I don't think he's coming out for the sixth no matter what happens. But Severino, I think there's going to be the question, and it's going to have to be the biggest decision maybe Boone makes all game, is if Severino is on, do I ride him into the sixth or possibly seventh inning, or do I immediately go to that bullpen, which everybody is going to be second-guessing if it doesn't work for Boone? Because they'll be saying, you have this great bullpen, why didn't you go to it earlier?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't for him.
And I think it's going to depend also on the matchup, on what's happening in that following inning, who's up, you know, what the order looks like, you know, what they've done, how their at-bats have looked against Severino. I think they're going to take a lot of that into consideration because, you know, at that point, you're going matchup. You're going batter-to-batter matchups, right? I mean, you have the pitchers. You know what you want to do, and you're going to be looking at them as, you know, did they have a good at-bat against Severino? And these guys can hit right-handed pitching. We know that. It doesn't really matter as much if you're a lefty or righty for a lot of these guys. They are right-handed strong, but they can hit both sides. They can hit lefties and righties. And the bullpen for the Yankees is probably predominantly right-handed, minus obviously Britton and Chapman, who they're going to try to save for later in the game.
And Happ,
yes.
No, I don't see Happ getting in that game, which kind of makes me question, why is he on the roster? We'll get into the roster in a second. But you mentioned you're going on batter-pitcher matchups at a certain point in this game. There was an article in The Athletic, and Boone was quoted talking about how much they look at batter-pitcher matchups, and he said, we don't really pay attention to it. It's more about splits, how you've done recently, and stuff like that. What does it matter if a hitter is 3-for-11 over the last 3 years against a pitcher? Those at-bats 3 years ago probably don't mean anything.
Right. And I mean, you look at some of these guys, like you could say, if that were Chad Green, you know, and you're looking at stuff from him a year or two ago, he's a different pitcher than he was. Or even Severino, you're looking at Severino, what he was and what he is today. He's a different guy than, you know, maybe some of these, like Jed Lowry probably has some at bats that, what are you going to do? Throw them away? He's having the best year of his career too. So he's also better. So I do agree with that. I mean, it makes sense. And again, look what happens. If you're failing 2 out of 3 times, you're a Hall of Famer. So what do these numbers really mean at the end of the day? I mean, with the amount of time between them, they really don't mean that much. It really does depend on how you're going at that moment.
I think maybe for some players, it does give them an extra little confidence, like Gary Sanchez versus David Price. I think Gary Sanchez just feels comfortable against David Price. And every time he's up there, he looks like he's hitting a ball 500 miles an hour. So I think for some players, it might be a factor.
I think it's different for the example that you said is, you know, David Price. They've seen David Price a ton. He's in the same division. You know, we're seeing this guy. It's a well-known ownership of David Price. So there's also the thought behind it, all the media coverage, the fans, like everybody in that building knows that David Price gets owned by the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. So it's a little different. But I mean, I think the bigger thing is when you're looking at batter matchup versus the pitcher is on that given day, like, is this guy seeing the ball well? Are his at-bats good? Was his first at-bat? Did he foul a bunch of balls off? Was he just missing it? Was he, able to locate that slider out of Severino's hands? Like, I think those are the big things that they're going to be looking at, because if you see a guy that's putting up a tough at-bat, laying off the slider and taking good swings against the fastball, then that's somebody who and if this person can hit the ball out of the park, let's say it's Chris Davis, you know, that's where you have a concerning at bat and you might want to change it up.
Nick Tolley in the Facebook comments said, we haven't really heard about any pitchers having dead arm in the past couple years, but maybe Severino experienced some of that this year. I don't think the Yankees ever used the term dead arm, but do you think that's a possibility to why he struggled for 7-8 starts?
Yeah, I mean, there was an article, I think it was in the Times or the Post, or I forget where it was, but it was there was a lot of interviews. It might have been with George King. It was an interview with Larry Rothschild, and he was talking about this exact thing, and he compared it back to Justin Verlander's second year being in the bigs, and it was almost an identical stretch when he came out and missed and struggled in the second half in around the same time frame, and then finally found it again. His arm, you know, got his strength back, and he finished the season really well. So yeah, I think that probably was it, because when you get tired, and we've been, you know, I think that was one of the things that we talked about too, was fatigue. And maybe it's not the arm. It could be a number of things. It could be your legs. It could be your shoulder. It could be a certain part of the arm. But once that starts going, once you start feeling fatigue, that's when your mechanics get out of whack. And I think, you know, whether it was one and the other, chicken and the egg, I think at the end of the day, his mechanics were out of whack, whether it was fatigue that did that, or he just got into a slump with those mechanics and wasn't able to refine that same motion. But mechanically, he wasn't in the same place. And I think we saw that with him not locating the fastball and, you know, not getting the same action on the slider.
I think there's a number of reasons why the Yankees ended up deciding to go with Severino over Happ. And it kind of, doesn't it seem more like that they were deciding between those two pitchers? I kind of feel like Tanaka has been sort of on the outskirts, at least being talked about amongst fans and amongst media. But for Severino, he's a much better home pitcher. He has 15 of his 32 starts were at Yankee Stadium this year. The Yankees in those games were 13-2, and Severino was 10-2. 92 innings pitched and only a 2.74 ERA. Only 8 home runs allowed. And if you look at Happ gave up 8 home runs at Yankee Stadium in just 39 innings pitched. So
that's the big deal. That's a big difference.
The A's are a right-handed team, a right-handed power-hitting team, and Happ is susceptible to the home run ball. So I understand he has limited the damage. He's given up a lot of solo home runs. That's a credit to Happ. It's kind of like the Tanaka thing. Yeah, Tanaka's going to give up his home runs, but a lot of them are solo. So you can live with that. You might not be able to live with that in a wild card game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They get aggressive when there's nobody on. Tanaka's giving up those solo shots, or unless it's a Derek Jeter day. But he's, you know, they get aggressive, but it's calculated. They do it when there's nobody on, when they have really good matchups, and then they'll be, you know, highly active in the strike zone and go after these guys. Whereas Severino is attacking constantly. He's constantly attacking because he's got overpowering stuff, whereas the other two are more finesse. I mean, Tanaka could still ramp it up 95, but 94, 95, Happ's what, 94? You know, these guys have a much inferior fastball, but they work. They're great pitchers. The problem is, they can leave them hanging and the balls get taken out, and any contact in Yankee Stadium with a power hitting team could be a home run.
Marcus Anderson asks, do you think Chapman's going to be the closer, or do you think that we could, you could see Boone sticking with Britton, who he has sort of stuck with towards the end of the season? So let's also just morph this into the question of what's the bullpen, what's the line of bullpen arms that's going to come out after Severino?
So I think we're going to see Chad Green. I think Chad Green's probably the first guy in. That's my guess. But again,
it depends on the situation, I think.
It does, but I honestly think in any situation, unless Severino goes deep. If Severino goes, let's just say Severino goes 5, I could see them going still with Green in as the next guy.
I meant less about the inning and more about the base runner situation.
You mean Betances?
Well,
you mean don't bring Betances in with base runners on?
Bring Betances in. But Chad Green, last year we saw Chad Green come in the fireman role in the first inning, and he struck guys out.
Yes.
Chad Green's been very good this year, but he has not had the same strikeout stuff. I think we could see him going to Chad Green in a clean inning scenario. And if he needs to get out of a jam, maybe using Robertson.
Robertson has been giving up some big home runs this year, towards the end of the year as well. You know, I don't know. I don't think there's as much of a difference. I don't think it's a big upgrade with having David Robertson in there over Chad Green. Honestly, Chad Green's been in the situation before. I got to believe for a situation like this, that fastball is getting ramped up even more. I see him as probably one of the most effective guys out of the bullpen to start the bullpen train. I think D-Rob absolutely has the faith in the team in Boone, but he's shown some vulnerabilities. There's been chinks in the armor recently with D-Rob, and I have a difficult time bringing him in. I know the Houdini acts. I know the nicknames. I know he's done it here before, but he makes me nervous.
He came in, he pitched, what did he pitch? Like 3 1/3 innings last year in the wild card game. He couldn't feel his arm by the end of the time.
He had all those great emotions,
grabbing his crotch after Sanchez got hit in the nuts. He was the star of the game, one of the stars of the game out of the bullpen last year.
It's another year, baby. It's another year.
Another year of miles on his arm.
We all get older. And D-Rob is he cannot escape the father time.
Could you see Britton getting into this game earlier than expected if they need a ground ball double play?
Yes. So that's one of the big things I think we could see. I definitely think we could see Britton come in, especially because he's a lefty. If Boone's saying Chapman's my closer, then yeah, I could absolutely see Britton come in as a fire extinguisher role if they needed to get or if they needed to flip around Jed Lowry or get Chapman out or something like that in a big situation. I could see them going with him. He's going to be the one that I think is going to be moved based on situation more than anybody because he's a lefty.
So did you, you know, Liam Hendricks is from Perth, Australia, right?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So I heard him speaking. I was watching ESPN was showing like press conferences and Liam Hendricks talking.
Did it surprise the living shit out of you?
Yeah, it did. You cannot lose a wild card game when an Australian opens the game. And I love the land down under. I mean, Graham Lloyd. Graham Lloyd was amazing.
One of the best haymakers I've seen on a baseball field.
But
Liam Hendricks coming out of nowhere.
Liam Hendricks is not Graham Lloyd.
No, I don't know enough about Liam Hendricks to call him Graham Lloyd. That's for sure. Graham Lloyd was he was like a tall, skinny, lanky. You know, he just didn't put up with anything too. He definitely kicks kids off of his lawn, 1,000%. Like Graham Lloyd was the deal.
So he's going to be opening. I could see him just going one inning. So when we're talking about matchups, Yankees batters versus Liam Hendricks, you kind of also have to throw it out the window, right? Because they're going to be facing the bullpen. Most of the hitters are going to go up there on Wednesday night and face a different pitcher every time they go up to bat. Yeah. And that's difficult. That's why bullpenning is so effective, is because every time it's a press the reset button, a new guy's coming in there, throwing gas. He has his best stuff. The Yankees feast on starting pitchers the second and third time through the order. That is when the Yankees offense is at their best. They destroy starting pitchers if they get them to the fifth inning, because by that time, the starting pitcher's worn out. The Yankees bats have seen them two or three times, and boom, they're ready to go. Not with bullpenning. And we saw the Yankees struggle all damn year with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays bullpenning.
No, I think that's one of the concerns when you're talking about these new guys every single time is the fact that the Yankees do work the at-bats. They make calculated... they have calculated at bats. They work the count. They kind of lull you into their zone. And you're right. When they come around second and third time, that's when they start striking. They're going to have to do a lot more preparation ahead of time with these guys. Some of them they've seen, like when you're looking at the bullpen, like there are some guys, Sean Kelly, they've seen, Familia, they've seen, Rodney, they've seen, Blake Treinen. Did they see him last year when he was with the Nationals? Possibly, but there's not a lot of time with some of these guys. But the majority of them, like Rodney's been around for a while. Sean Kelly has a horse head on his head. They know exactly who he is. So there's tape on these guys, and they've had at bat. So it's not like you're getting someone who you've never seen before, a starting pitcher who you've never seen before. Because that was the Yankees' MO a few years ago. It was any young pitcher that came up, the Yankees couldn't touch him. And it was frustrating as all hell because nobody had heard of the guy and shuts down the Yankees. I think with the relievers, there's definitely a lot more experience and there's more tape on some of these guys.
Tim Conrad asked, do you think the Yankees are already planning on using both Severino and Happ and feel better about J. Happ coming in from the bullpen, and that's why Luis Severino got the start?
So I think that because Happ is on this roster, I'm pulling up the roster right now just so I can take a look at it again. And
10 total pitchers.
Yeah.
Severino, Happ, Tanaka, Lance Lynn, Chapman, Betances, Britton, Green, Holder, Robertson.
So when you're looking at this and you're looking at all 10 pitchers and you're thinking long guy, long guy, long guy, because maybe that's what you need at some point, right? If the first inning is a disaster like it was last year, maybe they don't go to Green initially this time. He's not that same two-inning guy he was as far as effectiveness too. And I think when Girardi went to Green last year, he knew that he could get, if he needed to, get more length out of Green if he wanted. We're looking at the length guys here, and you have Lance Lynn and you have Jay Happ. Jay Happ made and Tanaka, but I think Happ is the emergency guy. I think Happ is the emergency guy that if Tanaka struggles early on, they could go right into Jay Happ. If Severino struggles, if they see a redo of last year, I got too many goddamn notes in front of me.
Yeah.
When they could go back to, they could go to Jay Happ, who could work length.
But
I think he's a just in case. I think it's the only reason he's there.
Just in case. Well, then what's Tanaka? What's he doing there?
I don't know why both of them are there, honestly.
Because
to me, it doesn't make as much. When you're looking at the alternatives, that's like maybe a Tarpley, but do they have enough faith in Tarpley? I mean, I know he looked good towards the end of the season.
It was his very small sample.
His first couple outings, he did not look good, but he started playing much better and he started pitching much better. But he's also another lefty. So does that override having a guy like Happ or Tanaka? Maybe not against a right-handed dominant lineup.
Right, and then you're getting into the guys like Tommy Canley, who's been garbage.
He's been so bad this year.
Sonny Gray, who wasn't going to sniff this roster. Who else? Herman.
You cannot lose any situation having Sonny Gray on the mound. Nobody has the balls to put him on that roster because things could go badly and they'd all lose their jobs.
Aaron Boone would not make it two steps out of Yankee Stadium before being mobbed.
No.
But so it is interesting because I don't expect Tanaka and Happ to both pitch. And I think do you think they'll use Tanaka before Lance Lynn?
No.
So Tanaka is there for what? If the game goes into the 15th inning?
Potentially. I think that's when you're looking at. So if you have two of these long starters, I think they'll wait to use Lynn. They'll wait to use Tanaka because they have enough guys. Look, it all depends on how Severino goes. Obviously, we know that. But they want to hold off some of these guys for later because if it does go extra innings, he wants to be prepared and he wants to make sure that he's able to throw a guy who can go out there and eat a whole bunch of innings. And if you have Lance Lynn waiting in the wings or Tanaka waiting in the wings, you can get as much as you need out of them.
And it does line up perfectly. If they don't have to use Happ or Tanaka, it puts the Yankees in the best possible situation to beat the Red Sox in the division series because Happ can go game one, which means he can also go game five. Tanaka can go game two. He's better on the road than he is at home. And then Severino can pitch back at home where he's better than he is on the road. They've put themselves, I think, in the best chance to beat Oakland and the best chance to beat the Red Sox.
And that was one of the things that I really thought was going to be one of the factors. And they will never come out and say that this was a factor unless they win the game, then they'll talk about it. But
I don't even know if they're going to say it then. I think they're just going to say Severino was our guy. He was our guy.
But the thing is, that's absolutely true. But it's still irresponsible for them not to look forward. I know you don't look forward as a fan or as a player or as a manager. You have to beat the team in front of you. I get that. But you also have to be as prepared as you possibly can if you do come out winner. You can't be completely left, you know, stranded and like, oh, shit, now what do we do? If you win the game and then go to the Red Sox, unless the thing goes, you know, 20 innings, then you're in deep shit. Then Sonny Gray's coming out somewhere. But you have to think about it at least. You have to have some kind of a preparation for it because if you do win the game, you got to be ready.
So Marta Foscani, Marta, I know exactly who you are. You've been on our live chats before, and I probably butchered your last name. I apologize. She asks, who's going to be the offensive star of the game? So let's get into the offense, the position players on this roster. Three catchers, Sanchez, Romine, and Higgy. Seven infielders, Voit, Glaber, Didi, Andujar, Walker, Hechevarria, and Tyler Wade, although I don't expect him to do anything other than pinch run. And then five outfielders, Judge, Hicks, Stanton, McCutcheon, and Gardner. I think because Wade's there, he can pinch run. If they need to have him play defense somewhere, he can play pretty much anywhere. That's why they have Higgy on there, because you might want to pinch run for the catcher, and then you have insurance for Romine, who's catching, if he gets injured.
Yeah, so that's the reason why they have the three catchers for sure, if there's an injury or pinch hitting and or both. Who was the what was the name of the pinch runner they had? Was it in 2015? Noel.
Noel. I was going to say Noel. Homer Bush. I was about to say Homer Bush.
Homer Bush.
You were talking about like the 90s.
No. In 15. But yeah, so that's why they're doing that.
He didn't get a chance to get in that game.
He didn't get in the game. He
couldn't get any base runners.
God, that was a boring game. And we all knew it was going to be. I don't think there's any surprises on here, honestly. I'm looking up and down the roster of the guys that they have on here. You know, maybe the three catchers is something that people probably didn't think about, but it makes sense of the switching out the pinch runners and then a potential injury. You can't be left without a catcher. And then Tyler Wade, I mean, would be the only other guy, but he's there for pinch running. And then, you know, maybe a defensive substitute later if need be. It'll be interesting, I think, because of who they have here. Because they have Hechavarria and they have Wade, both those guys can come in and play defense in multiple positions.
Walker, very too. Don't underrate Walker. I think Walker's going to play a part in this game because he can pinch hit lefty and righty, and he can play first, second, and third.
I'm talking about purely defensive guys. Okay. I'm not talking about Walker. I absolutely think Walker's going to play a role in this game. He's going to come in a big pinch hit situation at some point too. But when you're looking at Hechavarria and Tyler Wade, my thing is what I'm looking at, and I think is going to be very interesting. If the Yankees do get a lead, if it's a one or a two run lead, seventh, eighth inning, at what point and do they switch out for defense Miguel Andujar?
I think if they have
because
a lead.
Because that's what's going to happen when you have these two guys on this team.
I think if you have a one-run lead in the seventh inning and Andujar's not due up the next inning, he's coming out of that game.
Because it came up, a couple of series ago when Andujar got subbed out, that tied the game. I forget who it was against now. And he was, you know, we had to have an at-bat with,
It was against the Red Sox, I think, when it was the series at home.
Yeah, maybe. So, yeah.
No, but you can't have Andujar there because the guy cannot turn a double play.
Right. No, he's a liability in the field. There's no doubt about it, but. You know, Gleyber Torres has also been proven to make a lot of boneheaded errors in the field as well.
Yes.
So are you subbing
it's boneheaded
out
versus
for...
it's boneheaded with Gleyber versus just he can't do it with Andujar.
Yeah.
Like he did the double clutches, the delaying of the throws. You cannot have it if you're in a one run game in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. You can't just hand the A's on a silver platter a free base.
No, I mean, I get it. I'm just wondering if it's going to be a ninth inning thing or if they're going to do it even earlier than that, seventh inning unless he's due up.
Seventh inning unless he's due up the next inning.
Yeah. Wow. I don't think it's going to be that early. It would have to be I think if it's a little bit of a bigger, if it's a bigger lead, they would do it. I don't think if it's a one-run game that they would do it in the seventh inning.
Well, if there's a bigger lead, I guess, then his bat doesn't matter as much because you
right,
have a bigger
lead.
Right,
and you sure up your defense.
But you want to sure up your defense. You have a one-run lead. You don't give up any more runs. You win the game.
It's a small margin for error. I don't know. I think they still want that bat in there. It would be very difficult for me to take Andujar's bat out in the seventh inning. I don't think that's happening.
But you could put Walker in there, who's a better third baseman, and still have a decent bat.
Yeah, assuming he's not already pinch hit at that point. Yeah, I mean, look, because you know who else you're going to have? You're still going to have Hechavarria on the bench, and you're still going to have Tyler Wade on the bench at that point. So the chances are that Neil Walker might not even be on the bench anymore.
True.
You know, there's so many different scenarios because this is a game seven. They're going to be playing everybody and anybody. But yeah, one run lead, two run lead even. I don't think they take him out in the seventh. Maybe the eighth. One run lead in the ninth, 1,000%.
So think back to March. We were in spring training.
We didn't answer the question though. Who's the big? I don't even remember. Kind of. It was who's going to be the offensive star?
Oh, you want me to go first?
Yeah. Don't say the guy I'm going to say though. It's going to really piss me off.
And it's going to be Gary Sanchez.
Oh, okay. That's not who I'm thinking. It's going to be Luke Voit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, he could cement it. This Luke Voit might earn himself a plaque this week.
No, I'm serious. The only because the only thing that Greg Bird has. Is that home run against Andrew Miller? So Luke Voit's going to come in and hit a bigger home run
off like Familia, off an ex-Met in the eighth inning, like a two-run go-ahead home run, and Greg Bird might just off himself right there in the dugout.
It may be curtains for Bird at that point. I don't even know what he would do. I don't know how you look anybody in the eye at that point. Now you have no big home run that anybody cares about anymore because your substitute just hit a bigger one.
And Bird, Sonny Gray, and Ronald Torres, three players not found on this roster, three players I don't expect to be on the ALDS roster if they make it that far. I mean, if you had asked me back in March, I would say those three are guaranteed for a playoff roster.
It's crazy. When you're looking at how this roster is panned out and what we started with in the beginning of the season.
Yeah, look, you know, let's go through these guys. There's
the pitchers would be pretty similar.
But the position would be players.
Voit
wasn't here. Gleyber Torres was not on the opening day roster. Andujar wasn't on the opening day roster. Echevarria wasn't on the roster.
Neil Walker was in Tampa.
Tyler Wade was on the opening day roster, actually. And Andrew McCutchen was a San Francisco Giant.
Yeah. So you're looking up and down this, and there's a lot of differences and a lot of massaging to this roster and what they've done. But yeah, I mean, I'm loving it. Honestly, 1 through 9, when you're looking at how these guys are setting up and kind of how they've been coming into this season, going back to the confidence in this game, and I don't want to get too freaking cocky or anything, but I do have confidence. I feel like it's a different year this year. I feel like these guys ended the season right. They ended the season the way they needed to end the season. Gregory is actually talking about, he just said something, scoring early and taking the pressure off of Seve. I think that is massively important.
And someone that can tie into, I'm looking for the comment and I can't find it and I apologize. Someone had said, how is the crowd going to play in the game tomorrow? So you get early offense that settles Severino down and that keeps the crowd just absolutely juiced up.
Yeah. And that's when, if you're talking about like nerves of young players coming into Yankee Stadium, a lot of that is going to be this crowd going balls.
It was going you and absolutely I were both crazy. There last year. It was the loudest I'd ever heard Yankee Stadium. I'm going to be there tomorrow night. I plan on not having a voice on that podcast after the game tomorrow. So yeah, the Yankees score early. The place is going to be just vibrating. It's going to be so loud.
And now there's been a precedent set from last year and into the playoffs. Like Yankee Stadium was rocking. I mean, pandemonium in the Bronx. We had our guy Danny calling in from England with the pandemonium voicemail, which is still one of my favorite voicemails of all time history. And we have the t-shirts, the pandemonium in the Bronx t-shirts. That's exactly what it is. It's pandemonium. When that place is rocking, when everybody now knows what that stadium can feel like, everybody knows now that the new stadium can shake. The new stadium can do everything that the old stadium did do. Mm. It's like, hey, you know what? It can be that way. All they got to do, it's the people that bring it in. It's not the building. It's the people. I know we all love the old Yankee Stadium, but this one can be special too.
Are you a little nervous that because the Yankees went so deep in the playoffs last year, it's going to bring a lot of people we don't want in the Bronx for the playoffs this year? A lot of fair weather fans, a lot of just scoreboard watchers.
Those are some expensive tickets, man.
Those are some expensive tickets
for casual scoreboard watching fans. I think those guys are going to be the ones wearing their brand new hats in front of all their friends at a party. That's where I see those guys. Where can I be in front of the most people that don't know I'm a Yankees fan so they can see me rooting for the Yankees? Not at Yankee Stadium.
You mentioned the voicemail line. We want good or bad, whatever happens. Call up the voicemail line after the game. 646-480-0342.
Put it in your phones. Put it in your phones. You're never going to remember it when the time is. Put it in your phone. So that way you have it. Throw it on there and call it whenever. Because that's the who's the one you call? Dr. Ruth or whatever the hell is the line where you call and start talking to somebody.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
I don't even know either. It's older. It's beyond my time even.
Let's speculate what the lineup's going to be because that has not been announced. I think that we've seen this lineup over the last few games. I think we saw the wild card lineup. It was McCutchen leading off in left, Judge second in right field, Hicks, center field, batting third. Stanton, batting cleanup at DH. Voit at first, batting fifth. Didi at short, batting sixth. Andujar at third, seventh. Sanchez, eighth, catching. And Gleyber at second, batting ninth.
So the difference, the only thing I think could change in this is Didi and Hicks flip-flopping.
Didi will go up to third.
I think if they feel confident in the way he feels, I mean, he's looked really good since he's come back. He really hasn't shown much from it.
Aaron Boone has a shrine. Him and Cashman have personal shrines to Aaron Hicks.
They do love Hicks. There's no doubt about it, but they also love Didi. And Didi, after what he did last year, You want to give that guy at bats. I mean, he is the most clutch hitter in this entire lineup. There's no doubt about it. Like, the guy comes up in big situations. Don't you want that bat up?
Of course I do. I love Didi. But here's the thing with, I guess you could flip Hicks down to the sixth. Here's what it does, batting Hicks third and Didi sixth or vice versa. It kind of splits up the righties to best of their ability at this point. The most right-handed hitters you're going to have in a row are five.
Yeah. No, I don't even think it matters as much with this lineup either, especially with the way that these guys can go to right field. I think that's such a big deal. I think the fact that Judge and Stanton can both go to right field, you know, well, I think that changes.
Voigt too.
And Voigt, it changes the way that you approach the pitchers, whether it's a lefty or a righty. And I think it'll change how the Oakland attacks these guys as well, because they could go to the opposite field so well. Look, they're going to be in trouble one way or the other. And the fact that Neil Walker coming off the bench as a switch hitter definitely helps matters.
Did you, so I found that when Severino was announced as the starter, the majority of the Yankees fans were a little upset. They thought it should be Hap.
I was listening to WFAN for a while today and just listening to these people call in. Some callers were livid that Severino was starting, that Hap wasn't starting. Like,
because they probably haven't watched since last wild card game.
Or they've watched a few games and just seen Severino struggle. They don't know that he was pitching better in his last couple starts. Not all the information's there, most likely. I get that. Look, if Severino's going, he's the guy that you want. I mean, I understand that Hap has been very good, but at the same time, people take for granted what Severino has been and what he has come back to be, I think. I think they were just looking for a little glimpse of him coming back and showing that he could be that same guy. Yes, they love Hap, but we all know why they got Hap. One of the very big reasons they got Hap, and it wasn't to pitch against Oakland. It was to pitch against the Boston Red Sox if that time came up for the division or, you know, in an ALDS if necessary, if possible. So that's going to line up for why they got him, I think. And if you're looking at this game and this team in front of us and you're saying, well, he gives us a better opportunity to win this game, I don't really believe that. I think that you're having a very good opportunity, probably damn close to all three of these guys. You're having a similar opportunity to win this game. I think they all give you a very similar chance of winning the game. Like, if you're looking at Vegas odds and either one of these guys, I bet it would be very similar, the odds. I don't think they'd change much.
So a bunch of people are asking what the A's record is when Liam Hendricks starts, and they are 4-4 as a team when Hendricks the Aussie opens.
I mean, I don't know how much that really tells you, because he's an opener.
Thing, like, he's going to pitch one inning, maybe two at most, if he has like a 5-pitch first inning for whatever reason. And I think overanalyzing Liam Hendricks versus the Yankees batters, or whoever it is, the next guy to come out of that bullpen versus the Yankees batters, I just don't think it's worth overanalyzing, because it's going to change the next inning.
Look, bullpenning is all the rage. I get it. I get it. But I have said all year long, it's not a sustainable model to win games. I don't think it is. The Tampa Bay proved me wrong in a million ways this year. Yep. Because they won freaking 90 games. They did it practically all year long. They had primarily one starter. Yes, they were an anomaly. And my hat is off to the way that team played. But you come into Yankee Stadium in a one-game playoff, play-in game, whatever the hell you want to call it, at Yankee Stadium with this lineup going well, and you're bullpenning, your odds of one of those guys having a bad day, yep, is increased a lot. And it doesn't take much for this team to put up 4 or 5 runs. They can do it fast. They've shown that this past week. The runs can go up fast. So you have a guy coming in there and struggling, boom, 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 game could be out of hand very quickly.
You said it's not sustainable, but it doesn't have to be sustainable to win a one-game wildcard game or even win in the month of October. Sustainable is out the window at this point.
That's not true. It absolutely has to be sustainable for a series. There's no doubt. Like, yeah, one game.
I thought you meant sustainable for a full season.
I'm talking about in general, but in a playoff game, in a playoff series, I don't think it's sustainable either, because you don't know how many guys you're going to have to use in a playoff game.
I think if the A's got to the division series, they would not bullpen every game. I think you're going to see Cahill and Mike Fiers in there. But who gives a crap? All we care about is Wednesday, and they're going to bullpen. And it can work for one game. We saw it work against the Yankees a dozen times this year.
I go back to my point. With this team fired up, with this lineup the way it is at Yankee Stadium, with the stakes where they are, all you got to have is one or two of these guys to be off a little bit. All for nine innings. That's a lot to ask for. That's a lot to ask for from an entire bullpen staff, for an entire pitching staff. It's not just a bullpen staff. It's their entire pitching staff. It's a lot to ask for when you're going up against these guys who know damn well how to hit in Yankee Stadium. And, you know, we have the numbers for all of our guys at Yankee Stadium.
They're all better at home than they are on the road. That's like the big takeaway here. Aaron Judge is night and day at home versus on the road. Didi, his power plays well at Yankee Stadium. Miguel Andujar, I guess, hits everywhere, but in 75 games at Yankee Stadium, he's batting .312 with 16 home runs. Up and down, you look at it, even the new guys. Where is it? Luke Voit in 17 games has 15 RBIs and 6 home runs.
Of course he does.
McCutcheon's on base every single time you look up. He's got a 21% walk rate.
McCutcheon's average, when you look at McCutcheon's numbers, they're weird. They're actually surprisingly a lot lower than you would expect because he's on base.
He's got a .420 on base percentage.
Well, that's why, because I think people see him on base and realize when you see that in 11 games at Yankee Stadium this year, he's hitting .225 and has 3 RBIs, but he's been on base, you know, 17.6% of the time. You're seeing a guy that gets on base a lot. And it's his numbers are deceiving.
Yeah, I just hope that when he does inevitably walk in this game, he doesn't try and steal a base, because I feel like he's been pretty unsuccessful. Yeah, he is 1 out of 4 stealing bases for the Yankees. So
McCutcheon?
Far. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't seem... I don't even remember the one he actually got.
I don't see the Yankees doing much stealing in this game unless they pinch hit again, pinch run Tyler Wade, and absolutely need a stolen base late in that game.
Because if that's the case, you're in a very obvious stolen base situation. Right. If Tyler Wade's in the game,
right.
Chances are they know that you're going to probably try to steal.
Right.
So, you know, I think maybe if they see something off of one of these guys, you know, that's one thing to keep an eye on. I think when we're talking about a game that's going to be bullpenned, if there are base runners, when you're seeing a lot of, and this is one stat I don't have, we don't have in front of us. And I don't know it, but when you're looking at guys who are working out of the bullpen, a lot of them are not as comfortable with runners on base. So if you could get them uncomfortable, if you can get some runners on base against a team that's bullpenning like this, who you have a guys, you know, working out of stretch primarily, they're used to that, but they're not the greatest at holding runners on because a lot of relievers are not, you know, that could play a role in the game. And maybe we're not looking at a situation where they're stealing a bag off the catcher, but they're looking at the moves of the pitcher. They're going off first move because they realize that he's not looking over as much. I could see little games like that being picked up on and taken advantage of.
I think we've analyzed in and out pretty much everything we can. Anything else you can think of? You seem very confident.
I mean, it's a, you know, I'm not overly I'm ready for the game. I think that's the biggest thing, is I'm ready for this damn game. I'm ready for them to play it. I'm ready for them to go out there and prove to everybody that they are the team that we know they can be, the team that we saw the first half of the year, even better than that, because they've actually upgraded since then. This team could be, you know, this is one of those teams that you see what happened in the second half, but you know what they can be. And I don't think anybody would be surprised if they made a very long run.
Because no one's going to be surprised, but then also if the Yankees fizzle out early in these playoffs, no one's going to be surprised either because of some things we've seen, some trends we've seen for the last 2 months.
The other thing about it, when you're looking at like a confidence perspective on some of these guys, and someone was just talking about this, kind of sparked me, just about having experience. I mean, you add a guy like McCutcheon to the lineup. I know you have some rookies in here too, but even Stanton's not a guy who's been to the playoffs. You know, he's not like he has a lot of playoff experience at all, but he's got that demeanor that seems like he would be totally calm and cool and collected in this moment. Nothing I think is bigger than the moment for him. You know what I mean? Like no moment is big for him. It seems like he just stays nice and calm throughout the time. So I feel like they have a lot of veteran presence in that way. And then obviously all the guys that have came back from last year, they've been in this role, and that's right. What we talked about last year. That's why last year was so important. They overachieved. They got as far as they did. They got this close, a couple outs away from tasting the World Series when they were not even supposed to be there. And that will prove, I think, If they could just get past this first game, but even for this first game, it'll prove to benefit them a lot because, you know, the nerves are less.
They are for guys like Judge and Hicks and Didi, but, and Sanchez, I guess, but Glaber's new, Andujar's new. Voit is, who knows what Voit is going to actually
be
in
Voit's,
the playoffs.
No, nothing's big for Voit.
McCutcheon's new to the team. He's had some playoff experience with the Pirates, but they never did shit in the playoffs.
So the two rookies that you're talking about, though, the guys that are going to be new to this, Gleyber Torres is like an old soul. I feel like that kid is a crafty 7-year vet. And then Andujar is just ice when he's up in the box. I mean, in the field, that's just bad mechanics. Like, I'm not blaming playoffs or big moments. I'm blaming bad footwork is what I'm blaming. But in the box, like that kid is cool as anybody, man. As Stu Scott would say, cool as the other side of the pillow. This kid can hit. We were talking about the Reggie Jackson interview on R2C2. They were talking about bat range and how much range he has at the plate and how much plate range.
The zone.
He can hit anything. That's one of the things. Like, he's a bad ball hitter. He's got that, yeah. Vlad Guerrero, not to that extent probably, but he's got that ability to hit the bad ball and get bat to ball in any situation. And that's huge for this.
Yeah, there was an article in The Athletic about Andujar's actual contact rate of pitches outside the strike zone, and he's, yep, still able to barrel the ball outside of the strike zone, which is why he doesn't walk a lot, but he also gets a ton of hits even on pitches outside of the zone. Most guys, they swing in a pitch out of the zone. If they do make contact, it's weak contact, not right, with Andujar.
And that's what Vlad Guerrero could do so well. Like, that guy, I mean, everybody remembers the ball that he hit off the ground. I mean, he literally could square up anything.
So now Andujar is Vlad Guerrero?
No, he's got that ability, though. He's got that bat to ball ability is what I'm saying. He's
Adrian
got that
Beltre,
that insane hand eye coordination.
Beltre Guerrero
combo. Yeah, yeah. He's only gotten better, man, throughout the year.
Without
only
the defense
better.
And without the arm.
Yeah, he needs to work on both of them.
Imagine
he's got
Vlad
an arm.
Guerrero's
he's got an arm. He just
base.
Doesn't know how to use it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, spend some time with Adrian Beltre in the offseason, please.
Yeah, Beltre, they're talking about Beltre might retire. So he's perfect. maybe Beltre can do for Andujar
Pedro.
What Pedro did for Severino.
I love it. I love it.
I think we just solved Andujar's third base problems in the offseason. Still concerned for tomorrow night.
Right.
All right, that's probably going to do it for us. I think we both are confident that the Yankees are going to win this game, which means we'll look
knock,
like
I'm
morons.
I'm knocking on wood right now.
Looks like, means we'll look like morons when we come back on here. To record after the game. So there will be a podcast up Thursday morning. Scott is going to be watching the game at home, so I will be at the stadium. So you'll have one person who's thinking logically and one person just coming
no,
with
I,
the gut
so
fan
I think I'm
going
to have to drink. I think I'm going to have to I'm having a couple buddies over and I'm going to have to drink heavily just so that I'm not
so
completely annoyed by you later.
Repeat of last year when yeah. we were both just incoherent.
If you're awesome. Going to be hammered, I feel like I need to be on that level for us to have a good conversation together.
Well, as you know, when you're there, because we were both at the game last year, and when we got home, we sort of watched, we read a little bit before we recorded, we read a little bit about the game and we watched some videos, and it's like, holy crap, you just miss so many of the little things that you
right.
always see on TV. You don't see from the stands.
No, that's definitely true. You have to look at the highlights so you can see a closer look.
Yeah.
I'll have all that stuff ready for you.
That's going to be your job.
Probably not, but maybe.
All right. And again, guys, call up the voicemail line. One of the probably my favorite thing of the postseason run last year was all of the voicemails after every unbelievable Yankees win, or unfortunately after some of the more crushing moments in the playoffs. So that number is 646-480-0342. Scott, any last words before the most important game of the season?
No, Tyler, if you could put that number in the comments again, too, please, so that people can put it. Program this number into your phone so that you can call during the game, after the game, whenever. Just call the number and leave a voice note.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.